Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for May 11th, 2010. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. Today I'm speaking with David Sherwood and David Mattis about a screen in the nematode C. elegans in which they identified gene products that are required for a normal developmental process in the worm, but which may also play a role in invasiveness of human cancer cells. Dave Sherwood and Dave Mattis join me on the phone from Duke University. First, let's define this biological phenomenon that you're interested in, cell invasion. David Sherwood, what is cell invasion?
This is actually a very important point. It's people often refer generally to cell invasion as a process when it turns out to be highly diverse depending upon the context. So I like to think of cell invasion broadly and simply as the movement of cells through a barrier. Now, this could be a barrier imposed by other cells. A great example of this is border cell migration in Drosophila, where these border cells delaminate from an epithelium and then migrate between neighboring nurse cells to reach the oocyte. Another great example is leukocyte migration, where as part of their migration program to exit from the vasculature, they actually have to move between, or in some cases through, the endothelial cells that make up that vasculature. The other main form of cell invasion is through the barrier imposed by extracellular matrix, which broadly is the proteins and proteoglycans that are secreted by cells. And it turns out the matrix itself takes on many different forms. And the one that our lab is particularly interested in is basement membrane. So basement membrane is the most ancient form of matrix. They go back to the dawn of metazoans and multicellularity. They're also ubiquitous in animals. They are thin, dense, sheet-like structures that underlie all epithelia, surround endothelia, and cover most other cell types as well. They're a formidable barrier to cells migrating through them because they're incredibly dense and highly cross-linked. And to just give you an example, the pore size of your average basement membrane is about 50 nanometers. And the smallest process a cell can make is on the order of about 200 nanometers. And so cells can't just simply stroll through these basement membranes. And yet somehow a number of specialized cells have the capacity to migrate through basement membranes.
What are some of the contexts in which a cell would need to cross a basement membrane? Dave Mattis?
Cell invasion through basement membranes occurs in a variety of contexts throughout the life history of an organism, including during both development and homeostasis. Unfortunately, it's also misregulated in pathogenic processes such as cancer. For example, we all undergo a cell invasion event as blastocysts during implantation into our mother's uterine wall. Then us mammals, as well as birds, also undergo another important cell invasion event during the process of gastrulation, the stage of embryogenesis where the germ layers, ectoderm, endoderm, and mesoderm, are formed. During gastrulation, the presumptive mesodermal cells undergo a change in cell shape from an epithelial nature to a mesenchymal phenotype, and accompanying with this transition, known as EMT, they penetrate an underlying basement membrane. Dave Sherwood mentioned another biological context where cells cross basement membrane. During immune surveillance, billions of leukocytes traverse the basement membrane in healthy tissue in search of microbial pathogens traveling in response to inflammation. Leukocytes must be able to coordinate a complex series of cell biological processes as they both navigate through the endothelial cells, as Dave mentioned, as well as through the perivascular basement membrane, and do this without causing any permanent damage to the basement membrane. Similar to many other pathogenic processes, we're finding out that invasive cells utilize the machinery that underlies both developmental and immune surveillance cell invasion programs. This includes diseases such as asthma and rheumatoid arthritis, as well as what probably receives the most attention for the study of cell invasion, that is the onset of the invasive phenotype in cancer, as tumor cells leave their primary tumor sites by invading through an underlying basement membrane during metastasis.
You study cell invasion in the nematode C. elegans, which is a model organism that's amenable to genetic manipulations and to detailed visualization. David Sherwood, could you tell us about that model system?
Sure, I'd love to. So the model system that we use in my lab is called anchor cell invasion into the vulva epithelium and C. elegans. And the anchor cell is a highly specialized gonadal cell that sits at the center of the gonad and actually in the future uterine tissue. And this highly specialized cell plays a critical role in mediating the connection between that developing uterus tissue and the underlying vulval cells. And it's important for connecting the uterus to the vulva, which is necessary for allowing passage of embryos to the external environment and for mating. And the cell invasion event is particularly powerful because it is really the first one to combine powerful foregenetics, genetics, where we can actually query the invasive cell and ask it what genes are required to regulate this process, and at the same time observe the behavior. It's very easy to visualize. And another thing that makes it so useful is it's a canonical evasion event. And by that I mean the cell invasion event happens at the same time in the same place from animal to animal to animal. And it happens over a very specific window of time. It happens over about an hour-long period. So it's very easy to watch the process and at the same time to use the strength of C. elegans genetics and now functional genomics, as we'll talk about here in a minute, to find out the genes that regulate this process. And this has been a particularly challenging part about understanding cell invasion, maddening in some ways. This has been a problem that people have been interested in for decades. And what's been maddening about it is that it's incredibly difficult to watch this process in vivo in most contexts, notably vertebrates, where the tissues are very deep, so you can't visualize when invasion events occur. They're dynamic, so you can't catch them. It's hard to actually visualize basement membrane, and it's incredibly difficult to genetically manipulate the system so you can find out the genes that are actually required to mediate this process. And so basically with our work, what we're finding is many different genes and processes are regulating anchor cell invasion, and we're finding that it's a combination of, much like what's thought about in cancer, where it's a combination of a genetic program within the invasive cells and then the microenvironment around the invasive cells regulating that invasion. So in our case, we've got a couple of different tissues that help dictate the polarity of the anchor cell, that is, where the anchor cell sets up its invasive machinery. And this is a very specialized invasive cell membrane in the anchor cell that contacts the basement membrane. And then we have another cue actually from the vulval cells that dictates the precise timing and targeting of invasion. And so what we think we have with anchor cell invasion is a really nice and powerful model for the first time to really address the fundamental genes and regulatory mechanisms that control cell invasive behavior.
In vertebrates, or at least in mammals, when cancer cells are metastasizing, for example, cells make these long projections called invadopodia that are important for their invasion. And these projections are rich in actin and other cytoskeletal elements, and they're also associated with protease activities. With the proteases presumably help these cells break down the matrix to help these cells crawl through. In the anchor cell system in C. elegans, do these cells make invadopodia the way that a vertebrate cell would?
This is something we are very actively actually working on in our lab. And the short answer is yes, it looks like it. Like you said, invadopodia are these specialized subcellular structures that are thought to be important in matrix degradation or removal. And they've only been identified in vitro before. And they were identified 20 years ago. And the big question in the field, I should say, one of the big questions is, are these structures of physiological relevance? Are they general structures that are used by invasive cells? And we have a beautiful story emerging in our group using high-end real-time imaging where we've found what we think is at least an analogous structure in the anchor cell. And I would just say at this point, stay tuned. That work should be published shortly. Surprisingly, what we don't have great evidence for yet is evidence that the basement membrane is degraded during invasion. And actually, we have data suggesting perhaps just the opposite. Now, this might be surprising for the field, but given that we're really the first group to really carefully examine this process in vivo, we think that this may be the norm rather than something specific to C. elegans or the anchor cell. And David Mattis can certainly add to this when he talks about what genes he found in our screen.
Dave Mattis, as the postdoc who did these experiments, could you describe that screen?
Yeah, absolutely. We took advantage of the fact that many RNAi screens have been done for plate-level phenotypes in C. elegans, and there are certain phenotypes that can be indicative of failure of the anchor cell to invade. That is a protruded vulva or an egg-laying defect. What we did is we screened through several hundred, about 540 of these pevil or eggled RNAi phenotypes, to look for those genes that specifically cause a failure for the anchor cell to invade. And in that process, we identified about 100 genes whose RNAi depletion phenotype results in a failure for the anchor cell to invade through the underlying basement membrane.
What sorts of proteins came out of your screen? Did you get some of the molecules that one would expect by analogy to what's known about invadopodia and mammalian cells? Did you get any proteases, for example, that would be used to chew up the basement membrane?
The short answer is no. Out of that list of 100 genes, we didn't identify a single protease. Now, this might be just simply due to genetic redundancy, as the C. elegans genome encodes hundreds of potential proteases.
If you didn't get proteases, then what did you get out of your screen?
So we did identify some other expected classes of genes, such as those that control cell shape change, like actin regulators such as cofillin and the RhoGTPase-CDC42, and adhesion molecules like integrin. We also identified, as far as speaking to the efficacy of our screen, sort of all the components of the genetic pathways we previously uncovered as playing a role in anchor cell invasion. Out of those 100 hits, interestingly, about 95% of them have potential human homologs, and the largest subset, about a quarter of our hits, are involved in DNA binding or transcription factor activity, which I'm hoping will be helpful in understanding the regulatory networks that program invasive behavior. We also identified chromatin modifiers, such as the histone deacetylase HDA1, and several signaling molecules, including the serine threonine kinase LIT1. It's an orthologue of nemo-like kinase invertebrates. In addition to some of the genes you might expect, we also found several surprising or maybe unexpected results, and that is we identified several genes whose molecular function appears to be in metabolism. These include a sodium phosphate transporter as well as a guanylate kinase, which is involved in regulating GMP to GDP conversion, and this is a process that you would imagine would be critical in every cell, but interestingly, this protein is specifically upregulated in the anchor cell during invasion, and it appears to be playing a previously unknown role in regulating invasion. We also identified a number of proteins who are very well conserved throughout the metazoa, the animal kingdom, but their function is largely unknown. And lastly, some of our most robust hits in the screen belong to a class of genes known as molecular chaperones. These are proteins whose function is to assist in the folding or unfolding and assembly of proteins and protein complexes within a cell. And our screen identified a co-chaperone of HSP90, one of the major chaperones in the cell, CDC37, as well as a majority of members of the CCT-TCP1 chaperoning complex. And this is a 8-member unit that serves as the major chaperone for actin and tubulin, as well as many other proteins.
Why was identifying the chaperone proteins from your screen a surprising result? Dave Sherwood.
It was, but maybe it shouldn't have been. So chaperones are not, it's certainly not the first thing that comes to mind when you think of regulators of metastasis or cell invasion. Generally, people think more of proteases and adhesion molecules regulating this process. But I think this is so because likely this is the way in which cancer and cell invasion research has been conducted historically, largely with in vitro studies and in cancer models where only mutated or highly overexpressed genes are studied. And I think this is a reason why some key regular, like chaperones, fell through the cracks. As we're learning more about invasion, we're learning that it is far more sophisticated and highly regulated than we previously imagined. And thus, there are many more genetic pathways that regulate this behavior than we initially expected. And I think this is one of the reasons that chaperones likely came out as a predominant invasion regulator in our screen. So when you knock out or down a chaperone, rather than one protein or gene, you're actually knocking down all of its client proteins as well, thus knocking out many different genetic pathways. And this is why we think it may knock out invasion so nicely and why it is a particularly attractive target for cancer treatment.
Did you follow up with any of these proteins that you identified as being important for anchor cell invasion in the worm and see whether they were also important for cell invasion in vertebrates?
Yes, we did. So
Dave Mattis.
Out of our screen of 100 genes, which I mentioned earlier, about 95% of these have potential orthologs or homologs in humans, the majority, about 90% of them, actually have no history of being involved with vertebrate cell invasion or metastasis. In fact, of those, only two of them, the histone deacetylase HDA1 and one of the chaperones that Dave Sherwood was talking about, the HSP90 co-chaperone CDC37, these are some of the only two genes out of our list that actually have a history of being involved in cell invasion. So what we wanted to do was sort of go through our list and just pick two examples of genes that hadn't been shown to be involved in cell invasion and query whether they did. So what we did is we used small interfering or siRNAs to knock down two genes, the ortholog of LIT1, nemo-like kinase, and a member of the CCT chaperoning complex, CCT5. And we did this in both breast and colon cancer cells, plated on a chick allantoic membrane, so that way these cells face an endogenous basement membrane. And the sort of surprising, or maybe it isn't, result is that the loss of both of these proteins in both of these cell types, both in breast and colon cancer cells, drastically reduced the invasiveness of these cells through the CAM basement membrane. And at this point, that we're very excited to follow up this work because we now have 90-some other genes that we'd like to look at and see whether they, too, are conserved in function in vertebrate cell invasion models.
Plenty more work to do then.
Yeah.
Thank you, David Mattis and David Sherwood, for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was our pleasure.
That was David Sherwood and David Mattis, authors of a research article published in the May 4th issue of Science Signaling. That article is by Mattis and colleagues, and it's titled In Vivo Identification of Regulators of Cell Invasion Across Basement Membranes. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.